Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the internet. Let's get straight to the docket. First, the Supreme Court shadow docket. Have you ever heard of that? Second, a woman in Tampa is an example of why there's no such thing as easy money, and it's also called theft. Third, there are two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. Lori Loughlin is now humbled and preparing herself for prison. Fourth, a mail carrier has one job. Why can't they just deliver the mail? Fifth, another thing to worry about when you go to Chuck E. Cheese. Sixth, a true crime Halloween display that we all should have. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a busy docket, but before we get to it, as always, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, as well as the little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. First on the docket, the Supreme Court shadow docket. Have you ever heard of such a thing? It's been around for a long time. Here's what's happening. Well, as most people should know, I hope everybody knows, the Supreme Court is now back up to 9 justices. Amy Coney Barrett took the judicial oath on Tuesday morning to become the Supreme Court's 115th justice, joining the bench at a time when the court is being asked to rule on pressing issues related to next week's presidential election. Chief Justice John Roberts administered the oath in a ceremony in the East Conference Room at First Street. Barrett was sworn in using a family Bible held by her husband, Jesse. Now, the judicial oath is the second of 2 oaths required for every new justice, and Justice Clarence Thomas delivered the constitutional oath Monday night on the South Lawn of the White House alongside with the president. Then Judge Barrett was asked whether she was familiar with the shadow docket. She stated that she was. It's become kind of a hot topic these days because it is getting more and more use as time goes by. And there's some concerns regarding this, quote, shadow docket, and they relate primarily to a special system that allows litigants to seek emergency relief from the Supreme Court in the middle of ongoing litigation. Now, under normal procedures, a case reaches the justices only after a full consideration and final decisions by a trial court, as well as the federal appellate courts, a process that usually takes months, if not years. But the shadow docket gives litigants a potential shortcut. When a lower court issues a ruling, even a preliminary ruling that does not decide the full case, the losing side can ask the Supreme Court to order an emergency stay of that ruling. A stay, if the justices issues one, freezes the lower court's ruling, stripping it of force while the litigation proceeds. Now, by preserving the status quo as it existed before the court's lower ruling, emergency stays can favor litigants who hope to run out the clock. Now, traditionally, litigants must satisfy a high legal standard to earn an emergency stay. Among other things, they must show that they would suffer irreparable harm if the lower court's ruling were left in place. Now, the onerous standard is meant to reserve this form of relief for circumstances in which the court's immediate intervention is needed to prevent extraordinary consequences. Emergency stays, everyone agrees, should not be a way to shortcut the normal appellate process. But as the number of these requests have grown in recent years, the court has acknowledged that the bar for relief has been lowered. Now, these emergency stays are not, strictly speaking, rulings on the legal merits of the underlying dispute. The emergency posture of the request usually means the justices act very quickly based on a very short timeline and limited briefs with no oral arguments. And when the justices rule on the request, their rulings take the form of short procedural orders that give little, if any, indication of their reasoning. Oftentimes, these orders are issued late at night. You see these type of stays that are issued oftentimes in death penalty cases. Now, we bring these up because we like to talk about the Constitution here. Obviously, when it relates to legal issues regarding criminal matters, but the Constitution is so very important because it affects so many things. And here, these shadow docket rulings are becoming more and more prevalent, and they're going to be a big issue over the next couple of days. And regardless of whichever side you are voting for in the upcoming elections, certainly the Supreme Court may have their place in deciding the election. Now, these, for example, in these election issues are very fast moving, and the Supreme Court has actually issued temporary emergency orders. This shadow docket moves rather quickly, and it comes to election litigation. The Supreme Court's temporary emergency orders are sometimes the final say on how elections are run. Now, for example, just this week, the court resolved two such election-related requests, issuing perfunctory orders that will require Pennsylvania to extend the deadline for counting mail-in ballots. That was a 4-4 decision, so a lower court decision remained. And also, the court will allow Alabama officials to reinstate a ban on curbside voting. Now, these are all issues that will ultimately affect elections around the country, because no doubt, based upon those orders, more litigation will ensue. Now, the Supreme Court is not exactly an institution known for its transparency, but they are known for careful deliberation. And the shadow docket, in spite of its power, sometimes lacks both. Keep an eye on the shadow docket. You don't hear much about the shadow docket. In fact, I would venture to say most people have never heard of it, but it's going to be a big issue in the next couple of weeks. And now you can tell all your friends, oh, that was decided on a shadow docket proceeding. Next on the docket, a woman in Tampa shows exactly why there's no such thing as easy money, and they usually call it theft. That's right. Please meet Hoy Tibma. She has been arrested for what you might say. That's right. She made 42,000 individual returns through 31 different Amazon accounts. And guess what? It was all a scam. Now, this sounds like a complete pain in the ass to do, but Miss Tibma must have thought that it was going to be easy money. There's no such thing as easy money. Apparently, the detectives found out that the scheme made it appear that Miss Tibma paid for the shipping costs on the returns, but in fact, she didn't. In the end, it is alleged that she ultimately received more than $100,000 in reimbursements. It was also discovered that 31 of her Amazon accounts were all registered to her residence under her name. Apparently, she took advantage of a loophole she discovered in the return process. And through the investigative means, the economic crime detectives were able to quickly locate and apprehend Miss Tibba. Miss Tibba admitted that she, in fact, had found the loophole and conducted the scam, and now faces charges of theft. Amazon assisted the police in their investigation because they want their $100,000 back. No such thing as easy money, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you, every time I thought I took a case that it was going to be easy money, it turned out to be the biggest pain in the ass. And Miss Tibma, although she may have made $100,000, she's probably going to spend the better part of that on attorney's fees, probation fees, and oh, by the way, probably have a felony conviction, which will prevent her from making more money over the course of her lifetime. Next on the docket, I have said this before, and you can look it up. You can go to our video, The 12 Undeniable Truths from a Criminal Defense Attorney. There are two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. Well, remember Lori Loughlin and her husband, Massimo Giannulli? They were less than humble when they were originally charged with basically giving money to get their daughters into school and trying to pay $500,000 to USC, and they created this big scam that their daughters were on the crew team, you know, the rowing stuff, and none of them had ever been on a crew team in their life. Ultimately, Loughlin and her husband entered a plea, and the judge approved that on August 21st of this year, and the former TV star will have to spend 2 months, that's right, 60 days in jail. In addition to that, she has a $150,000 fine, 150 hours of use of public service, and her husband has to go to prison for 5 months. I would think that that would be rather humbling when you are in a world where you can write a $500,000 check to get your children into school that they are not qualified to go to. She was humbled at her sentencing, where she told the judge she went along with this plan to give her daughters an unfair advantage in the college admission process, that she was allowed to be swayed from her own moral compass. She thought that she was acting in her child's best interest and out of love, but in reality, it only diminished her daughter's abilities and accomplishments. Laughlin's surrender date to the Bureau of Prisons rapidly approaches. She is apparently facing her sentence with resolve. She's going to go in, do her time, and get out. And she wants to move forward and get ready for 2021. And according to Ms. Laughlin's friends, there's some humility there that people really hadn't seen before from the star, which only confirms my theory. There's two types of people, ladies and gentlemen. That theory has never been wrong. There's two types of people. Remember it. Those that are humble and those that are about to be. Always be humble. Next on the docket, mail carriers have one job, and that's to deliver the mail. We brought you so many stories over the years where mail carriers have simply thrown away the mail for some unknown reason or kept it. I've told you I represented a mail carrier once who decided to keep everyone's junk mail, and he ultimately went to federal prison for that. It just doesn't make sense. Well, guess what? Once again, the Department of Justice has announced that a now former United States Postal Service employee in Kentucky is facing federal criminal charges after allegedly throwing several bags of mail in a dumpster. And in this particular case, it included at least 100 absentee ballots. Deshaun Bogery of Louisville was charged in the Western District of Kentucky with delay or destruction of mail in violation of 18 United States Code Section 1703. The prosecutors allege that the defendant discarded a large quantity of mail from a single route that was all scheduled for delivery on the same day. The mail was found in a construction dumpster in Louisville. There were approximately 111 general election absentee ballots being mailed to voters to be filled out. The dump mail also included approximately 69 mixed class pieces of flat rate mail, 320 second class pieces of mail, and two national election campaign flyers from a political party in Florida. The defendant told United States Postal Service special agents, that's right, the Postal Service has special agents, just like the FBI, that he was responsible for tossing the mail in the construction dumpster. All of the discarded mail was copied as evidence before being placed back into circulation for delivery. The motive is unclear, and there's no evidence that he specifically intended to affect the delivery of the absentee ballots that he was in fact carrying. On Monday, authorities also charged a man in Boston for setting fire to a voting drop box, destroying 45 of the 122 ballots that were inside. Now, Mr. Bogery faces a maximum of 5 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, as well as 1 year of supervised release. Now, going back to the theme, is there's no such thing as easy money. He thought that he could probably just get away with this, and now, once again, looking at a felony conviction and up to 5 years in prison. Just deliver the damn mail. Before we get on to our Chuck E. Cheese story, please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for your background subscription service today. You'll be happy that you did. When you sign up, you can anonymously search as many people as you would like, and you will have a report generated while you wait that will include, after a search of millions of public records, phone numbers, email addresses, and social media associated with the person that you're searching. It's also going to include criminal records, property records, bankruptcies, judgments, and marital records. Please go to crimetalksearch.com. You will have the information that you need to make good decisions about the people that you want to hang out with. Please go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket. Now, I say this somewhat jokingly, but you thought when you had to go to Chuck E. Cheese, you only had to worry about losing your kid. Well, apparently, if you go to the Chuck E. Cheese in Davenport, Iowa, you have to worry about people being shot at birthday parties. On Sunday, Eloise Chairs was found unresponsive by officers at about 7:30 p.m. at the Chuck E. Cheese in Davenport, Iowa. A woman by the name of Trishonda Pullian was arrested the following day and charged with first-degree murder. Ms. Pullian purportedly shot Ms. Chairs multiple times inside the restaurant while children and families were present before people started fleeing the scene. Ms. Chairs had become involved in an argument with a mother after her son's card game was taken by another child. Other mother's friend, identified as Ms. Pullian, allegedly took out a gun and shot Ms. Chairs in the shoulder, hitting a major artery. According to Ms. Chairs' sister, her children witnessed the shooting of their mother. Ms. Pullian remains in custody in the Rock Island County Jail without bail. Ms. Chairs was a mother of five, and her youngest child was only 4 weeks old. This shooting is part of a spat of violent incidents that have occurred at fast food restaurants, as well as restaurants throughout the country. The other day, a man opened fire at a McDonald's drive-thru in disagreement over change. Earlier this month, there were shots fired at a KFC drive-thru in Tennessee after the customer was given the wrong food order. In another similar incident, a mother was caught on video ranting at McDonald's staff because they forgot to give her children ketchup. Ladies and gentlemen, ketchup and your order at the restaurant is not worth going to prison for, let alone for the rest of your life. If that's the biggest thing that you have to worry about in a day is whether your children have ketchup or the order is correct, or a child may have taken a card game, I don't think that requires violence in any situation. And I'm telling you, as a criminal defense attorney, those circumstances are really tough to defend. It makes no sense. I'd probably tell you to go get enrolled in an anger management class or some sort of good thinking class so you can make good decisions and maybe work on that impulse control. Now, next on the docket, a true crime Halloween display that we should all strive for. Take a look at this Texas man's home that apparently was so good it required the police to go check it out. And not because they think it was a cool display, which they ultimately admitted that it was, but they went there because somebody was concerned that it was perhaps a real crime scene. In this display, the owner of the home, Stephen Novak, turned his front yard into a gory scene straight out of a horror movie using dummies, props, and more than 20 gallons of fake blood. There's a man killed by a chainsaw, another killed by a safe dropped on his head, one more with a knife in the skull and an apparent dead body in a bag and a wheelbarrow full of severed limbs. Who wouldn't want that crime scene in their front yard, particularly for Halloween? Well, apparently it was just a little too real, as some people complained, and several complaints were made to the police, so the police had to go check it out. Obviously, the police could do nothing but to say, that's pretty cool. And I guess they did poke around a little bit to make sure there were no actual human remains there, which there were not. Once again, people, get over it. It's Halloween. Common sense would be useful. It's not just useful at Halloween. It's useful on every day of the year. Give it a shot sometime. And next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, this is an example of good initiative, poor judgment. Meet Miss Lisa Landon. She apparently thought that it would be a good idea to have her cases dismissed that were pending against her. Who wouldn't want that? Well, if you can't achieve that on the merits of the case, what's the best thing you can do after that? Just file it for the district attorney on your own. That's what Miss Landon did. It's alleged that she submitted fake documents in three different court cases, which she filed electronically in the New Hampshire court system's electronic filing system. Apparently, the prosecutors became suspicious when they heard from a state forensic examiner who had been scheduled to perform a competency evaluation on Miss Landon. The examiner saw a notice in Landon's court file that the prosecutors actually dropped the charges, and the forensic examiner wanted to know if the examination was still going forward. The file purported to contain a no prosecution or a dropping of the charges filed by the assistant county attorney. Quickly became clear to the county attorney that the document, as well as other documents in the file, had been filed fraudulently. The indictment also alleges that Ms. Landon filed an order falsifying a decision of a retired Superior Court judge granting the waiving of filing fees in a lawsuit that she brought against Hillsborough County. That was a case involving a guardianship for a relative. So, Ms. Landon, good initiative, poor judgment. Yes, you want to have your cases dismissed. I appreciate your gumption of getting in there and figuring out the court system and the electronic filing system. But you can't file documents that aren't legitimate. That's right, you get indicted for doing that. And once again, there's no such thing as, oh, I'll just file this easy motion, particularly when it's a complete forgery, false, and you have no authority to do so. Maybe that mental competency evaluation can now proceed. All right, that's all we've got for you today on Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. We do appreciate you taking the time to watch every day, and we thank you for that. Because why? We are humble. Have a great day.